Yeah, your voice is very loud.
All right, so anything we should know before we get started and everything?
I've never said this before, but feel free to interrupt if something doesn't make sense or like you want to follow like a sort of a better explanation of something.
Because sure.
I've been doing interviews for 30 years, and sometimes half the people I talk to are like very shy. Mm-hmm. So I tend to just like rattle on to try to keep the ball rolling, and I've developed like really weird habits as an interview subject, like that are, you know, part of it is trying to just be nice,
yeah.
But also part of it is like trying to, you know, make something happen. But like, I'm completely excited by the idea of having an actual conversation rather than just like sort of filibustering,
yeah.
Which is something that I kind of accidentally tend to do. So
that's
anyway.
Okay. Yeah. So actually, honestly, when you called me yesterday and you're like, hi, this is John from the Miami Giants, you like sounded so fluent with that. Like, this guy's done this 8 billion times. I genuinely thought it was like a recording for a little bit.
You mean like a robocall? Like,
yeah,
hey, have you received one of these modern robocalls where it starts with this weird conversational lady going like, oh, hi, you're hard to reach to my husband. Well, listen, I'm a robot. It's a very weird new thing. But, I have done a lot of interviews, it's true. I actually did this, as an aside, I did this interview with this guy who was a really odd writer. I mean, he's more of I think he sort of wants to be a book writer, but he's writing for the AV Club, I think.
Oh, cool.
And he did a interview with me about being, this was like 5 years ago or something, and he was like, you know, John Flansburgh has been interviewed for 25 years, and I'm going to interview him about being interviewed.
Local man gets interviewed.
Yes, exactly. Local man gets interviewed. And it's a really interesting, I mean, it was like a really good idea for an interview because it really went like granular on all the weird things about how things have changed over time. Like now there's this whole kind of, we might as well be recording. I hope you're recording.
Oh, I am. You're good. Yeah.
Hey, you should put it on the thing.
Okay, done.
There's this thing that happens now, and this happens from like college papers all the way up to like the most respected journalistic outlets in the world, where you will get like a list of 10 questions. And they want you to write your answers in the form as if you are answering in the spoken word.
Okay.
And like, if it's not like if it's not written with enough informality, they'll actually send it back to the publicist and ask you to like change it up.
You sound too formal. Stop.
To make it less like you're typing it, but the thing is, you're typing it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like this crazy, crazy, informal, like imposed informality on something that is absolutely artificial. It's the fakest experience you can have in your life. And like, you're just, and part of it is like, this is, you know, I'm writing a formal letter to a formal question.
Yeah.
And, you know, from a very prestigious place. And they're asking me to basically be more of a schlub than I am as a person. I mean, one of the outlets that I speak of, a certain lady who dresses in gray, actually got into a little bit of trouble where they basically rewrote something by somebody else who is like a bigger star.
Mm-hmm.
To put it into this casual speak, and in fact, kind of misrepresented them in like a pretty basic way, and then the whole thing was revealed. And it's such a non-journalistic practice, you know.
Well, yeah. If you ask someone to like talk in a if you're correcting someone on like the way they talk, and then they submit it, and then you give it back and say no, you didn't talk right, then what are you doing?
It's all very curious, but you know, there's this other thing where it's like as like the tide recedes from just journalism in general, like, you know, as these newspapers and magazines have no less and less money, they really rely on people in the creative community to basically, you know, insert their, you know, fully formed press release like materials as if it's, you know, just as if it's journalism or as if it's it's a very artificial time.
Yeah.
But anyway, tell me who I'm talking to and like what is this radio station?
All right. So my name is Jack. The show's name is Phonos, spelled Phonos.
And like the Greek?
Sure. I got right. Phono and threw an S on it.
Oh, okay.
And
but it's not it's Phonos, like not Phonos.
Yeah.
Phonos.
Not plural Phonos.
Right. Interesting.
And this is on WTHS 89.9 here in Holland, Michigan.
Excellent. What's Holland, Michigan like?
It's a small little Dutch community, actually. And Hope College is like a school of like, I'd say 3,000 people.
Uh-huh. Is it like how far away from like, is it like Rust Belty?
Not really. It's like 45 minutes from Grand Rapids.
Oh, okay.
So like if I could walk to Lake Michigan, it would take me like 15 minutes.
Oh.
Which is neat. But we also get like lake effect snow, and that's genuinely the worst thing ever.
Right, right. Are you getting it now?
We got a little bit yesterday. So when you're talking about it, it reminded me of like we were probably going to get a big snowstorm. And it started snowing yesterday, but it all melted. But we'll probably get slapped here in like the next week or two.
Yeah, we once did a show in what is the place called that's in Michigan, but it's above like the actual
the Upper Peninsula?
We were booked to do a show in the Upper Peninsula, which like as someone on our road crew very snarkily said, we're going to the part of the United States they forgot to call Canada.
Essentially, yeah.
But the thing that was weird is it was a total crucible getting there. Like, it was like a day of travel to get there. It was like a 14 hours of travel to get there, and just flying and then flying a littler plane.
Was it from New York to UP?
Yeah. Like flying, you know, it was like, you know, like a weird, like, you know, two-step plane thing to to another little plane. Take us, which seemed like then we're on the little plane. And it's like when you're in a band and you're on a really little plane, like you're only thinking about one thing the whole time, you know? And it's like, oh, this snow is really bad, but it's okay because we're in a really little plane, you know? So it's just like, okay, this is horrifying.
You're afraid you're going to get Buddy Holly'd or something.
Yeah, absolutely. and then we landed, and then we had to drive in a van. And this, you know, we're talking like there's probably 10 or 11 of us, and we're in like, you know, some like Ford Astro minivan, driving for an hour and a half through, you know, on roads that have just been completely filled with snow.
Yeah,
and we're all just, you know, like everybody's got their shoulders up around their ears, just, you know, thinking like this, you know, we're all squeezed together in this thing and it's so profoundly uncomfortable. And you're just thinking like, I'm a full grown adult. Like, this is, you know, lots of people have like difficult jobs, but this, it doesn't have to be like this.
No, for real.
You know? And then we get there and we do the show, and then the next day it snows so hard that we can't leave.
Oh, God.
So we're just stuck in this like hotel, sort of shining style for like another couple of days. And you know, and of course, you know, the truth is it's like, you know, John and I are the founding members of the band. It's our business.
Yeah.
Everybody else is like on our payroll.
Yeah.
When we do a one-off that turns into a 6-day run.
No.
Like we basically, you know, we're paying like thousands of dollars a day to basically just have everybody hate us.
Yeah.
You know, like everybody's mad at us. Everyone's wondering like why we're doing the show. Like I'm wondering why we're doing the show. Like I didn't even know. You know, I was like, why didn't anyone warn us that this was going to be And what's funny is that it happens so often up there.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, it's basically just like a snowball. Everyone who was at our show was like, we thought it was really weird you were coming now because, you know.
Was it like December or something?
Yeah, yeah. Like, it was basically coming in like the worst time of the year. And, you know, it was just like a terrible mistake.
I'm originally from St. Louis, Missouri. So even moving from St. Louis to just Michigan was enough of a culture shock for me. Because, like, it snows in Missouri.
Right.
But, like, my first year up here, I was talking with my roommate's mom. She was like, oh, you ready for winter? I was like, yeah, we have winters in Missouri. She was like, oh, you haven't had winter. I was like, oh, God.
Right, right. Well, the lake effect snow, I know people who live in Buffalo, and, like, they have like, lake effect type reality. And it's sort of beyond belief how bad it can get.
Mm-hmm.
You know? We actually just did our very first tour, you know, after 30 years of, like, touring across the United States every other year, like, for the entire time. We finally did an actual tour across Canada, like, a couple of months ago. A month ago. And I have to say, what was crazy about it is, like, they really spaced out their cities, man. I mean, like, and you wonder why they even have cities in, I guess it was related to the railroads, but, like, mm-hmm. you know, it is highly inhospitable. You know, Western Canada is it is a tough place to be.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. You know.
For sure. All right. No. Not to change subjects or anything. We could talk about weather all day.
No. We're moving on to the hard-hitting questions.
Hard-hitting journalism questions. So,
yes.
This is a pre-record, but for those of you who are tuning in on Monday around 9, this is Phonos. My name's Jack, and I'm here with John Flansburgh of They Might Be Giants tonight.
Yep.
And we're going to be talking. So the first thing we're going to talk about is just all the They Might Be Giants happenings. You guys have a lot of stuff going on right now. Most notably, I Like Fun just came out. And
yep.
Dial a Song is back on the radio waves and YouTube waves and phone waves. And Instant Fan Club is also happening.
Yeah, although the Instant Fan Club the membership is closed,
yeah.
So that's kind of, the periscope is going down on that. But, 2018 is a big, it's a big work year for us. So basically, starting in probably the middle of 2016 or near the fall of 2016, we started working in earnest on what would be I Like Fun and all the accompanying songs that would be featured on Dial a Song. I think it's sort of a hard process to explain because it's so sprawling. But basically, our intention is, if we're going to do a Dial a Song project year where we're releasing a song every week, we don't want to just be like, I'm friends with Jonathan Colton, and he had a thing like in like 2006 called Song a Week. He posted a song every week, and the way he did it is he just like sat at home and recorded a song every week. You know, like which like is kind of what you would think you would do. But the thing that was like nerve wracking this is part of it. It's like just by temperament. Like I think John and I are both kind of uptight about like the quality of what we're doing and don't want to get kind of caught out, like, not having anything finished.
Yeah.
We don't know how long anything is going to take to finish. And that sort of folded in with the quality that people expect. You know, like, you can't have a demo service. There's no demo level anymore in terms of, we can't even do a song live that we haven't recorded and not have people sort of instantly judge it on social media and in YouTube comments.
That's how Dial a Song started, right? It was just like, I think it was your tape machine, just like, and you just threw a cassette in there and just let people listen to it, right?
Yeah, it was very casual.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, I had this weird experience the other day where, you know how like YouTube like suggests things for you to listen to?
Yeah.
I actually tripped over this thing, you know, because I'm one of the administrators on the They Might Be Giants, the YouTube channel.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, like, it's very familiar to me to have, like, They Might Be Giants videos recommend, you know, like, you'll like the music of They Might Be Giants.
Cool.
Guy, and, guy and they might be giants. But like, but what was weird is that it suggested this compilation of what was a fan, like, tape trading cassette that had gone around for many years before the internet, called The Power of Dial Song. Mm-hmm. That's literally recordings off the phone machine, via telephone.
Oh, cool.
Of all the songs that were on the Dial Song, and it's an hour 46 long.
Wow.
And most of these songs are like a minute and 15 seconds long. Like there's a demo version of Birdhouse in Your Soul on there, mm-hmm. that I know that recording really well, but it's like all it is a verse and a chorus and a little instrumental break, and that's, you know, and that is essentially all there is on that recording. And I was listening to this thing and I was like, wow, these are the most casual recordings. Like some of them, I mean, I can tell that some of them were literally made singing into the phone machine. Like we didn't do a multi-track.
Yeah.
We just sang a song onto the cassette, and that's how it went out. And with a lot of things on, like the early days of Dial Song, like a couple of days later, we would just erase that and make another song.
So it would just be gone forever.
It would just be gone, yeah.
So and this like one dude who recorded on his phone and threw it on YouTube is just the savior of that recording now.
Exactly. Cool. Well, and when I was listening to these songs, I mean, I was like, oh my God, you know, that's not like such a bad song. You know, it's like there are a million songs on this thing that I have barely any recollection of at all.
Mm-hmm.
And very scant documentation. And then some of them were like, I remember that. That was good. Like, why didn't we do something more with that? You know, it's such an odd thing. But these days, you know, if we did something that was that casual, I feel like, I guess we would just feel too self-conscious if, like, the YouTube comment is like, these guys are losing it. Like, you know, there's no explaining a demo to people who are used to finished recording.
Yeah.
Like, and you don't want to say like, no, great on the curve. You know, there's no amnesty for kind of casually done stuff. So
yeah, no, for sure. So basically,
circling back to like, we spent like a year and a half or a, you know, 16 months or something, just writing and writing and writing and recording and popping into the studio and popping out, and you know, me and John trading files and just kind of trying to pile up as many songs as we possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
And then from the best of that, we pulled the best of that pile, or the most complete part of that pile, we pulled all the songs that are on I Like Fun. And it made for a pretty interesting album. You know, it's like, in some ways, it's like a very much a product of the Trump era. So it's like, you know, kind of got this, like, slightly paranoid,
mm-hmm.
Like, you know, things are getting horribly bad kind of vibe about it. But beyond that, you know, it's a rockin' record.
Well, cool. Well, yeah, it's a great record. There's some killer tracks on there. I know we've played, I played Communists Have the Music the, like, week it came out, and I, like, listened to it once the time before, and then I played it on the radio, and then, like, in the studio, I was really bopping with that. So it really stuck with me.
Oh, excellent.
Cool. So, moving on. I heard you were, before we got everything started, I know you were pouring a cup of coffee and more fun Holland, Michigan facts. It's actually a pretty bumping place for coffee roasters, surprisingly not.
Oh, I believe it.
So,
I believe it.
Yeah, so we have like three coffee shops in town, and the like debate on campus that you have to like pledge your allegiance to one of them. Which is
really,
yeah. So you're either like a Limoncello's guy or a Lemoncello's guy, JP's Ferris guy or a 205 guy, and those are your three options. You got the sticker on your laptop, you got your mug, and you just have to like praise that one coffee shop and fight anyone else who disagrees with you.
Interesting. Well, you know, in recent years we've been we had a tour bus driver,
mm-hmm.
who was a really unusual guy. He was a linguist.
Ooh.
And he was an academic, and he spent a lot of his time translating Spanish into Portuguese and Portuguese into Spanish.
Cool.
But he lived for a while. He lived in Portugal, and he said What's surprising is that, like, well, I guess Spanish and Portuguese coffee are both, like, two American tastes, like, extremely bitter and like, very, like, raw. Like, they really, like, just make very strong espresso-based coffee. So he actually, he said he, like, kind of couldn't take it. So, you know, even though, I mean, obviously, there's, you know, culturally, like, I'm sure there are people who are like, this is the greatest coffee in the world. But, you know, he was just like, I need to, you know, have a more normal coffee experience. And he actually started roasting his own coffee. And it's not a hard thing to do.
It's really not.
It's a lot closer to making popcorn than it is, like, when you hear coffee roasting, you think, like, oh, this is, like, something that has to happen in a factory. It's kind of like making popcorn.
It's so, pretty easy. Like, a lot of people that I know are, like, super... My brother's really big into, like, one of those, like, hydro pump jobs. You know what I'm talking about? For coffee?
No.
Yeah, it's, like... It looks like just, like, a big old syringe where you, like, shoot hot water out of a filter into your coffee cup. It's pretty interesting.
It's not like pressed coffee.
It's kind of like that, I think.
But... Huh. I mean, John Linnell is really into pressed coffee.
Okay.
To me, it seems like sort of cowboy coffee. It doesn't taste particularly great to me. But, like, so is this, like, this isn't the one that sort of looks like it's in test tubes?
Honestly, you might be right.
Yeah.
I got one for Christmas, and I've used it, like, once for my brother.
Uh-huh.
And, like,
is it complicated?
I don't have really an access to hot water so well.
Oh.
So, like, using it is hard.
Right, right.
Yeah. But people in town are also really big into, like, pour-overs. And comparing it to, like, a popcorn, making popcorn is super relatable.
Yeah, well, the pour-over thing is good. That's some, like, really high-quality coffee.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I love it.
Cool. All right.
No, I'm happy that coffee culture is, you know, has kind of taken off. Like, you know, because it was, like, the regular... You know, the alternative, you know, I mean, obviously, I think a lot of people hate Starbucks just because, well, for one thing, people always hate their first job, no matter what it is, no matter how good a job it is. So you're just going to hate, and I think a lot of people's first job is at Starbucks these days. So there's sort of no reason they wouldn't hate Starbucks. But, like, the world before Starbucks, which is a world that I was very familiar with, there was so much low-octane diner coffee that was so... sad making.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll never complain that we live in a post Starbucks reality.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's really pretty good.
I was talking about my brother a second ago, and I wanted to bring up what I've kind of hearkened as, like, a life of They Might Be Giants. So I was I'm only 19 years old, so I was, like, born in, like, the prime time of this. My older brother is 32 right now. And he, like, he threw me on to, like, No as a kid, and I just heard him listening to, like, a bunch of other stuff. Like, I remember, like, listening to Don't Let's Start when I was a kid and just hearing, like, Spiraling Shape and other songs in the background when I was ahead as a kid. And it was kind of like just growing up with the band in the background but not really, like, knowing it.
Uh-huh.
And when I was a kid, I found a copy of Gigantic, your guys' movie.
And, oh, right.
Yeah, I threw it on and watched the whole thing and just, like, without really, like, knowing, like, what They Might Be Giants really is, and just, like, watched it, and I was like, wow, I know all of these songs. Couldn't tell you the words, but I know all of these melodies.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and my older brother, when he was in college, he had, like, the William Allen White face everywhere, which really freaked me out. And it was awesome. So, like, just, like, how do you feel about, like, especially with all the kids' music out now, how do you feel about, like, people like me, I guess, like, living a life of They Might Be Giants?
Well, you know, I think we're kind of disassociated from it in a way. It's like, you know, we don't do that many fan-oriented things, like, where we actually interact with people. So,
yeah.
And I live a pretty isolated, you know, I spend most of my time in like a couple of hours north of New York City, where it's a pretty quiet area.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a really quiet area. It's like the population density here is like zero, and So, like, I think our lives are pretty unaffected by like the work that we do and like whatever notoriety we have. I had this experience years ago. It was probably like 5 years after No had come out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really at the beginning of, it was post Napster.
Okay.
I think the iPod had sort of just come in, but people were still very much, you know what it was? Just like the era when people were burning CDs a ton.
Oh, cool.
Probably like 2007 or okay. something. When there were still some record stores, there were still some bookstores, and there were tons and tons of people burning CDs. And we had guests come over, and a friend of ours came over, and they brought a couple who were their friends, and they had kids. They didn't have their kids with them, but we were just like socializing and, you know, having like, you know, lunch or dinner. We had dinner with them. We were talking and like they were. I don't even remember what they did, but they were just like local people. And I never mentioned that like I was in a band. I never said anything about being in a band.
Yeah,
which is like, you know, fairly typical for me, because it's just like, you know, you don't want to kind of like have people, you know, take over the conversation. So we just talked about everything else, about the area we're in and all sorts of things, the mm-hmm. local politics and stuff. And we talked about them. Mm-hmm. And then, as they were leaving, I pulled out a copy of No on CD. And I said, like, you know, if I would love for you, your kid to have this album, because I don't know how I introduced it, but the mom was like, oh no, that's okay, a friend of ours burned it for us a couple like a month ago, we've got that one. And I realized that like I had done such a totally casual job of keeping my identity as a guy and They Might Be Giants under wraps,
uh-huh.
that she didn't realize like I was anything but just a person who had a copy of No.
It was just a genuine conversation about this one album by this one.
Yeah, it was like, no, I don't need that. I got it burned. I burned that. It's cool.
Well, cool. Going off the whole family thing, so my older brother is also a huge Giants fan, and when I told him, hey, I get to talk to Flansburgh, he was like, oh my God, I have a few questions.
Excellent.
So, his first question was, would you rather go bowling with Rod Stewart or Henry Rollins?
I think probably Rod Stewart. I think Rod Stewart's probably a friendlier guy in some ways.
Yeah, you might be right.
It's hard to know. Yeah. I mean,
that's what bowling would do. Take him bowling, get to know a guy.
I worked with this drummer named Steve Calhoun years ago, who was on the DC like straight edge scene,
uh-huh.
for, you know, right, like, you know, way, way, way back in the day.
Cool.
And when Henry Rollins, before Henry Rollins, like even was in, what band was he in?
Black Flag.
Like a Black Flag.
Yeah.
Before he was the singer, he wasn't the original singer in Black Flag, which I don't track Black Flag so closely. But so, like, I mean, it's kind of like AC/DC, right? Like, there was, like, some guy who was the original singer in Black Flag for, uh-huh. like, a very important early interval. And then there's Henry Rollins, who was, like, the singer in Black Flag for the time that they were really famous.
Yeah, when they were, like, Black Flag, Black Flag.
Right, exactly. So, like, the, you know, AC/DC, to me, like, you know, Back in Black is, that's AC/DC.
Yeah.
Like, you know. But like for a lot of people, like Bon Scott is the only part of AC/DC that they like. But anyway, he knew Henry Rollins before he like lifted weights,
mm-hmm.
and he said it was like so weird to see him post weights and steroids, because he was like completely unidentifiable dude. Like, he completely morphed into a different person. He looks like a superhero version of himself.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, kind of crazy. I don't know. I don't really have a line on Henry Rollins. Like, maybe he's a total gentleman. Maybe he's, like, an interesting guy to chat with.
I think he's, like, doing, like, not, like, stand-up comedy, but, like, stand-up speech tours now.
Well, he stopped performing music a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
And they never, it's an interesting thing. Like, he never made a public announcement about it. He never said, like, I'm not playing, I'm not touring doing music, but I don't think he's played a rock concert in 20 years. And it's like he's still very famous. Like, it sort of goes to show you how long a tail, like, a career can have, even if you're really not working actively at all.
For sure. Because he was, like, just, like, the face of punk rock for a little bit.
Oh, absolutely.
He's like Wikipedia image number one kind of dude.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. But, you know, conversely, Rod Stewart, I don't know if you're familiar with the band Faces.
Yeah.
But the Faces, Small Faces and Faces, did some amazing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I would highly recommend checking out this band, this album by Jeff Beck called Truth.
Okay.
Which Rod Stewart sings on, and, you know, it's sort of in that supergroup moment of music where a lot of bands were kind of moving out of the 60s and into the 70s, and I think it's very possible that Keith Moon might play uncredited on this album, and they do, like, the most insane kind of post-Hendrix-infused version of the song, Shapes of Things, which was the Yardbirds' big hit single.
Yeah.
They do this sort of psychedelic version of it that is so nuts. And Rod Stewart is, like, he's just a fantastic kind of front man for, like, that kind of music. I think, you know, it's hard to sort of separate the crud of Rod Stewart from the good part. But there actually was, you know, when he was just doing these kind of psychedelic blues songs, he's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And the last question I have for my older brother is more of a Linnell-oriented question, but he asked, will there ever be any more State songs? I don't know if
you know that obviously should only be answered by John Linnell, but I have a sneaking suspicion, no. And I don't know exactly why.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's not, John's not, it's such an open-ended project in a way you could kind of do almost anything you wanted and then sort of fill it in as State songs. And I think he kind of, you know, teased people into thinking that all the states would end up getting represented. But
yeah.
I don't know. He's easily distracted.
To tie it back to good old Hope College, are you familiar with Sufjan Stevens?
I certainly am.
Yeah, he went to college here for a little bit.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, the whole States thing. He made Illinois, Michigan, that whole deal. And, yeah, on Michigan, there's a song called Holland, which is just super representative of the town here.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, big, big songs about States guy.
but he, you know, he stopped after two.
Yeah, he made Illinois, Michigan. He said he was going to do all 50, and then he said, no.
Right. No, he actually works in the same studio complex, like he's right down the hall from where we recorded everything for the past year.
Cool.
He's got the corner room in this floor of Project Studios, and then there's the big studio, and Pat Dillett, the guy we work with, has like the big room off the big studio, and that's. But Sufjan Stevens has his own corner office.
Cool. Do you think there's ever going to be like intermingling between the Giants and Sufjan?
You know, I really just like rode the elevator down with him. I don't think he really knows who we are. So
great.
Yeah.
All right. To tie it back to, I guess, more of a you solo oriented question: will there ever be any new Monopuff stuff ever?
I would love to do that. You know, Steve Calhoun, the drummer I was talking about, who used to know steroided Henry Rollins. He was the drummer in Mama Puff.
Yeah.
He was a great guy, and I loved playing with him because he just had like a really really exuberant kind of style. Mm-hmm. He had played in a lot of. He's from Denton. He went to that music place in Denton, and just he's something very very almost like New Orleans like about the way he played. Like he just plays very lively. Sort of unpredictable kind of drummer, and it's just great. And Hal, the bass player, you know, he does a lot of commercial work now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I could afford them, to be perfectly honest.
To rattle off that, have you ever, when was the last time you went on monopuff.org?
I haven't been on monopuff.org.
I found it on the Damn Giants wiki and clicked the link, and it was last updated October 14th, 1998.
There you go. So let's go internet.
It's a real treasure of a place.
Really?
Oh, so, yeah.
I mean, what is it exactly? What is it?
I'll pull it up. Unlike the main site, it says, like, if you like They Might Be Giants and Ween and Bare Naked Ladies, you'll love Monopuff.
Huh. I wonder who put that together.
I have no idea. But yeah, updated last on October 19th, 1998. I totally recommend that. It's like, it's a real just treasure at this point.
Interesting. Yeah, the .org thing is a weird parallel existence.
Yeah.
You know. There's a lot of sort of like uninvited guests into the conversation.
Mm-hmm. And going off They Might Be Giants wiki, how do you feel about just a website of just a history and backlog of everything you've ever touched musically?
Well, the They Might Be Giants wiki is an amazing resource. It's it's a fan-driven thing.
Yeah.
But because the front row of They Might Be Giants is so... fact-based. There's a lot of, they do a lot of good research into like what actually happened when, and like a lot of things get corrected.
Yeah.
And as a resource for us, just as a touring band, mm-hmm. to be able to go back and see what set lists we put together last time we played in London,
yeah.
I can see the show we did in London, and if there's some really big set piece in the show that we don't want to necessarily repeat, it sort of saves us from accidentally doing the same show.
Yeah, so it's just like a good old open source thing for even you guys to use.
Oh, it's invaluable for us because. Cool. You know, we have a pretty big repertoire of songs, but we also end up leaning on a lot of the same songs just because, you know, they're the popular ones. But if you can figure out a way to sort of reshuffle the deck, like you know, if I'm putting together a set list and it's like in the middle of the show and it's like, okay, we need to sort of have a song that really rocks out and kind of brings this, you know, this part of the show to a crescendo, like
mm-hmm.
what, you know, and John's just sung two songs, like, so it's got to be like a song that I sing that's really up tempo. I'll be like, okay, well, should I do like Twistin' or like Cyclops Rock? And I'll look on this wiki and I'll see, oh, well, last time we played in London, we played Cyclops Rock. So we should, you know, we'll play Twistin' tonight instead. And that way it won't seem like, and like, a simple thing like that can, you know, listen, I mean, we put a lot of effort in just, like, keeping the show fresh in every way. Like, we introduce new old songs all the time. We introduce new songs all the time. And, like, I think anybody who's seen our show multiple times will realize, like, that it's, like, we really make an effort to keep the ball rolling. But it's, like the great thing about the wiki is that it really... whatever might be lacking can get like sort of double checked,
yeah,
and sort of it's like a little additional kind of sleight of hand that we can put into the show that just makes it seem all that much more different.
Oh yeah. Have you ever fact checked yourself using the wiki?
I went. I usually just use it for like dates. For like trying to figure out like when things happened. But I don't need to rely on facts that much. So. I do sometimes forget like what album certain songs are on, because like some things were made kind of over a course of time. Like there were songs that were written in the before John Henry that ended up on Factory Showroom. There were songs that were written on before the first album that ended up on Flood. Like there's things like that that kind of like constantly confuse us.
Because Spacesuit was written, like, stupid long ago before Apollo 18, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Alienations for the Rich was written before the band even started.
Cool.
So, there's a lot of things that are just sort of out of left field in one way or another. And I think people tend to, just whatever something is, album something's associated with is, like, what you think is that's the deal, but... A lot of things have history longer than that.
Yeah. To go off the John Henry route, it's my personal favorite album, but it was like the talk for a little bit because it was the first Giants album with a full band.
Yeah.
And you guys received some like pretty serious backlash on that, didn't you?
Well, you know what? That is, I think I can set the record straight on. I can fact check that for you.
Okay.
Basically, we started the band in 1983, which is like before drum machines really existed.
Yeah.
And we were putting together, like sequencers existed, and people would like trigger sounds off of synthesizers. And like if you had like what would be called like a track show or an electronic act, you could do something, but it really wasn't drum machine based. And then over the course of like 84, 85, 86, like the drum machine technology really emerged. And that's like the beginning of hip hop and like Run DMC and all the things that go. That all happened right as we were starting They Might Be Giants.
Yeah.
And so we were a duo that worked with a pre-recorded tape that was our rhythm section.
Mm-hmm.
But at first, it wasn't actually a drum machine at all. It was basically sounds we created off a Moog synthesizer and then drum sounds that we recorded at our project studio. So we'd record real like live drums and then just play along to that.
Yeah.
So like the band, that was the format for the band for essentially 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then in like 1991, when like two things happened, which was like that had nothing, or three things happened, and only one of them had anything really to do with us directly.
Mm.
We stopped playing clubs, which held 200 people, and started playing theaters that held like 2,000 people.
Yeah.
So the distance of the audience from us was really huge. So people couldn't really necessarily see us as directly, and it kind of what was like a very charming cabaret kind of show that seemed very non-illusionistic. Suddenly turned into something much bigger, and we were nervous that the tape wasn't the drum machine part of it didn't really scale in that traditional sense.
Yeah.
Then you have the Milli Vanilli event where all of a sudden like going from being like an electronic music act to being what would be perceived as like a tape act or like a, like a track act got really blurred. And like, so there's this huge sort of negative, top spin on just working with anything pre-recorded seemed like very phony. Like we weren't really worried about whether it seemed phony to people or not. Like we just were like, these are our original songs. Like, are they not original enough for you? Like, we're doing something that's very much our own thing, but the culture around us was shifting. And then finally, it was like the grunge moment, and everybody was like you know, stage volumes were changing radically. Mm. We were doing all sorts of festival shows with, you know, in front of huge audiences, and the whole rock culture was changing. So we thought, like, well, this would be an interesting time to, like, experiment and see, like, what it would be like to have a live act, mm-hmm. to just go with a live band. And the great thing was, They Might Be Giants as a live act totally exploded.
Yeah.
Like people loved our show, like, went from liking our show and thinking it was kind of interesting to loving our show. And it was like, everyone was dancing. It was like an incredible celebration and really, really super fun. Like,
yeah.
it just was a very successful transition. And I don't think anybody had any complaints in terms of, except for people who wanted to hear me and John talk back and forth more, which was kind of the thing that really did go out the window.
Uh-huh.
I don't think anybody minded. But what the big challenge was figuring out how to just do the kind of indefensible, fragile, sonic things we were doing with samples and MIDI programming and all the kind of, you know, what you would think of as like the more eccentric part of what we were doing.
Yeah.
Kind of got like normalized by having a live band, like trying to take a live band into the studio. Like going into a studio with a drummer and a bass player, people have very stock ways of working, mm-hmm. you know, like engineers and producers are like, we know how this works. Like, this is how you record a good drum sound. This is how you record a good bass sound.
Yeah.
Like, when we would go into the studio as a duo with, like, a bunch of samples that we had made at home and, a drum program that we had made at home, you know, the producers would be like, how do you want to do this? I have no idea. I don't even know what we're doing. I don't even know what this is supposed to sound like.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we went from making very original-sounding recordings to suddenly, like, making very regular sounding albums, mm-hmm. and I think it was it wasn't like a huge transition, but it took us a while to kind of figure it out. But in the movie Gigantic that you saw,
mm-hmm.
there, I think there's sort of like a bunch of fake drama infused into this transition. This transition was not bad. This was actually.
Yeah.
It was a easy and generally celebrated transition, but in the edit of the movie, it sounds like there are people who are like walking out on our show. And I feel like it's kind of hypey.
Yeah, no, it was just like, it's just a change, I guess, because like it just went from just two dudes and a tape machine on stage to this whole thing happening in front of you.
Yeah, I think the truth is also we were struggling with. If we were sharper or more consistent performers,
mm-hmm.
And we had like the confidence that like we were never going to be misunderstood as an act, I think we could have stuck with the duo format and it would have worked.
Mm-hmm.
Because the truth is, it's like there's like a comedy thing going on with what we're doing that I think is actually really personal and can be very refreshing and cool,
mm-hmm.
but the thing is, like, it's hard to. It's not like an act. Like, we're not stand-up comedians who can like reproduce our performance night after night. Like, if we're just like totally, you know, dragged out from being on the road for, you know, six shows in a row, like we just played the songs and like we might not be like super cheerful between the, you know, like that's the thing that's sort of different about being in this band rather than being in like a theater show or like a comedy act or something that's like there's a script or there's like a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
There's no strategy for a being like cheerful. Like we can actually do a pretty good job of being super grumpy at times.
That's like my favorite thing about the band. That's really hard to explain to other people. So I can show people Giants and be like, are they just like a comedy group? Because like they'll hear songs like The Day or something, and it's just like no, like their lyrics actually mean something. It's just like listening to that and just knowing that like they're just dudes who like to have fun and have fun in their music sometimes.
Yeah, well, that's a very kind thing to say. I mean, it's a weird balancing act, and it is kind of its own. It's just kind of a self-defined act, and it does have a humorous aspect to it that makes it kind of a little bit lumpy compared to most things that are either very self-serious or clearly for laughs.
Yeah,
I mean, I think the truth is . We just wanted to figure out how to make music that would stand up to. We wanted to have our sensibility, but also hold up to repeated listening.
Yeah,
and that's in and of itself. Like, anytime you incorporate humor into something, it's in a way you're kind of you're sort of almost putting a sell-by date on it. Like, you don't want to listen to a comedy record 100 times.
Yeah. That's the thing about Giants. It's not like, oh, there's the one joke in that one song. It's such a unique and ornate thing that I haven't heard in any other band that makes me just love the band even more.
Well, that's extremely kind.
I love your band, dude.
I appreciate that. Well, I enjoy the MIP Giants too.
Hey, me as well.
It's been a manic episode. The weird thing. We've been doing this for 30 years now, and inevitably people are like, how can you be in a band for 30 years? Like, people aren't even in bands for, 5 years. And to me, the whole thing, my whole life has, gone by in, 5 seconds.
Yeah.
It's been such a, it's really been a blast.
Yeah. I guess that just, I guess you can throw, the, oh, the time flies when you're having fun.
It's a testament to having fun, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay, to wrap things up, because we're hitting almost the hour mark.
Holy smokes!
Yeah, right. I wanted to ask you what you've been listening to as of recently.
Well, let me see if my computer is still charged, because that will be the easiest way for me to recall.
Yeah.
Speaking of fact-checking oneself. Sometimes I go to the iTunes most played thing, but I think it's in Spotify. There's a thing that's
like most recent
songs you added.
Oh yeah. Like library.
Yes. So library, is it called library? No, it's called song here. Songs. This is the songs I've clicked on.
Cool.
Well, this morning I just added, excuse me, a song by this woman, Gabby Garbutt, who is a British singer, she's collaborating with, this is a blast from the past, the front man from Dexys Midnight Runners, the guy who did Come On Eileen, who people probably don't know anything else by the Dexys Midnight Runners, but he was a really interesting and talented guy.
Cool.
Back in the day, and I guess he's a producer now, but this song, Lady Matador, is like, it really sounds like Dexys Midnight Runners in the original. They were like a post-ska. Come On, Eileen is like a weird one because everybody's heard it too much. But he did some cool stuff. Here's a song I just listened to called My Darling New Orleans by Little Queenie and the Percolators. That's just like a New Orleans song. I was listening to the Keith Richards book On Tape, which is a really strange book.
Yeah. Honestly, okay, and, random thought that just came into my head.
Yeah.
I think 3 years ago, you tweeted something about the Lounge Lizards, and I wanted to thank you for turning me on to the Lounge Lizards, because they're awesome.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, John Lurie is a very... John Lurie actually works with our engineer, Pat Tillett.
Cool.
And he's a really interesting guy. He's become a very successful painter in New York City, like fine art painter. So he's had a whole second act, which is kind of crazy. But let's see. Here's a song called "Do Your Thing" by an artist named Moondog. There's a documentary about him that's pretty interesting.
I've listened to one of his live albums. That sounded amazing.
Yeah, what's funny is John Zorn was very... John Zorn actually backed up Moondog in Moondog's band.
Cool.
That was the first professional gig he had in New York City as a young man. Let's see. We got Casey and the Sunshine Band. We got I'm Bored by Iggy Pop from one of his mid-70s, late-70s albums.
Yeah.
Here's Mass Seduction by St. Vincent.
Oh, yeah.
Here's a song. Do you know the band The Raining Sound? I don't know anything about them.
I don't.
But they have this song called Never Coming Home that is a beautiful song.
Okay.
I recently was listening to this woman named P.P. Arnold. Speaking of Rod Stewart, she went out with Steve Marriott from The Faces, and she did the first version of The First Cut is the Deepest. The original, her version of First Cut is the Deepest is like this amazing kind of soul. It's hard to even describe, but it's just like it's much, much better than the Rod Stewart version of First Cut is the Deepest. Let's see. Here's a song by War on Drugs. Oh, this is a great song. Have you heard J.D. McPherson?
I have not.
I don't. I think he's from like the Midwest somewhere.
Cool.
But he does this sort of like retro. He almost sounds. It sounds like it's from another time. It sounds like it's from the 60s. He has a song called Northside Gal that is like totally killer.
Cool.
That's my top 20 of the week.
All right.
You know, a lot of things I don't know particularly, like, you know, I spend a lot of time listening to a lot of the same stuff, but but this is all the new stuff.
Well, cool. Well, all right. Yeah. That kind of wraps up our recording time here.
All right. Well, awesome, man. Well, thank you for the interest, and thanks for being part of the radio network. And
Thank you for your support of college radio, for real, and independent radio.
Yeah, community radio. It's the best.
Well, cool. Thank you. This has been Phonos here on WTHS 89.9. I'm
Jack.
Yep, that's your boy. And I've been talking with John Flansburgh from They Might Be Giants.
All right, cool. Talk to you later.
Yep, I'll see you around.
Okay, bye.